Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a great day. The Doug Gottlieb Show is coming to you live and direct from sunny Southern California, where we're waiting for the division round of the playoffs. We're interested in the hire that the Jacksonville Jaguars have made. And, of course, it's also the home of your defending NBA champion, your Los Angeles Lakers. Now, I only bring up the Lakers because that's kind of where we're going to start. We're going to start in the NBA. We'll start in the NBA where a massive, massive trade took place yesterday during the show. And I want to get to all of these things, right? I really do. I want to get to what's going on in the NFL quarterback situation, some clarity of what's going to happen with the Rams, the hiring of Urban Meyer, all of this stuff. But I really want to begin with the James Harden trade. And I don't know if you need credit for what you do in your world. And I don't think that credit is necessarily what all athletes want. But I do believe that you get to a place where you want to feel the respect and admiration of not just your peers, but of everybody when you're participating in your business in a public forum, right? Like, look, does an Academy Award truly mean something to Leo or to Denzel? Like, Denzel Washington is an unbelievable actor. I think back of the Denzel movies, and I mean, I can name like 15 that I love. Honestly, I think my favorite Denzel characters are when he plays the bad guy. Right? That's actually, there's been a couple where he's played the bad guy, and I like those even more than when he plays the good guy, and he's played the good guy as well. He's got 2 Academy Awards. And best actor in Training Day was, you know, the one that, and that, like, does that mean that's the best role he's ever played? I don't think so. Now, Training Day was pretty awesome. I mean, he was an awesome bad guy in that movie. But he was good in Crimson Tide. He was amazing. Amazing. Right? Like, go back and look at some of the movies that he's been in. Was it Glory? It was ridiculously good in Glory. Like, I could go back through so many of his movies and go like, oh, he was good in that, he was good in that, he was good in that, good in that. You go through his IMDb and you're like, oh my goodness. Did he need the Academy Award for his peers to recognize him as one of the greatest actors of all time? Like, no, but it doesn't hurt. It feels like you're being recognized. It feels like you're being respected. It feels like everybody's like, yeah, he's one of the greatest ever. And I think that's kind of the search for Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant was an MVP of the league in Oklahoma City, led the league in scoring in Oklahoma City, I believe, 4 times. And as a, you know, as a game-changing 6'10", do-everything player, what did people say about him? Well, he didn't play that good a defense. He couldn't win a championship. He wasn't clutch. He, you know, you name all these things. So he went to Golden State where, like, look, we can say whatever we want about Golden State and their 73-win team. That team didn't win a championship. So nobody actually cares about regular season wins in the NBA if you don't win a championship, and they did not. They lost Harrison Barnes, and they upgraded. I think he went there for the respect that he believed came with winning a championship and doing so across from LeBron James. I watched the same games you did. He was the better player than LeBron. LeBron would have a good first half, and then would kind of run out of gas, and Kevin Durant would be the better player in the second half. Both of those series, he was the better player. Now, you can sit here and go, well, he had a better supporting cast. Maybe. Maybe it also fit him a little bit better. But he also defended better. He did everything a little bit better and efficiently. And I think that KD was like, well, you said I couldn't win. You said I wasn't better than LeBron. I did both. Didn't get the respect he wanted or thought. He felt like it came with winning a championship. And then when they needed him against Toronto, he came back early. And they were probably going to win the series because you had Kevin Durant. He was that sort of game changer. And then he got hurt. If you didn't see the difference in that series alone, you can't get it. Why would he go to Brooklyn? Because I think he's still chasing it. I think he's still chasing the respect, the admiration. And so now you have massive egos in James Harden and Kyrie Irving. Massive talents in James Harden and Kyrie Irving. But I'm going to give you a take, which I don't know if you've heard everywhere else. I've heard all sorts of things. But how about this one? If Kevin Durant can pull this one off, I actually think it should earn him the respect that he so very much deserves as a leader, as somebody dudes want to play with, right? Because that's really the key to what LeBron was able to do last year. LeBron still had some games in which athletically he didn't have it. They didn't beat the best team in the West. They didn't beat the best team in the East, but they did find a way to win a championship, and he probably wasn't the best basketball talent on his team. Anthony Davis was. But LeBron's leadership, ability to motivate guys, to get others to play above their level, and to stay together even in the bubble, that's being recognized as part of his greatness. If Kevin Durant can take the mercurial Kyrie Irving, who so far hasn't wanted to show up to work for 2 weeks and no one really knows why, and James Harden, who can't get to the NBA Finals outside of when he was a sixth man in Oklahoma City, has been the MVP of the league, but you can't win with him because he doesn't play defense and he doesn't get the foul calls in the postseason the way he's gotten the regular season. If Kevin Durant can figure out a way to get those two knuckleheads to fall in line and figure it out, and play for an inexperienced coach, how can you not respect him as the greatest player in the NBA currently? This is Charles Barkley, the Hall of Famer on the Dan Patrick Show, explaining why he thinks it's going to go poorly in Brooklyn.
I don't think it's going to work. I think they bought him in because they wasn't sure what was going to happen with Kyrie. They bought him in as an insurance policy. I think it's going to be fascinating watching those three guys play together, if they all play together. I mean, we have no idea what's going on with Kyrie, but no, I don't think it's going to work at all because those other guys don't bring in the diversity. Those other two guys, they are offensive players. There's only one basketball. I think it's got zero chance of working.
Doug Gottlieb Show here off Fox Sports Radio. I don't think it has 0% chance of working. I know, I have a feeling that there's a stronger likelihood of disaster than there is of success. And of course, I respect my good friend Charles Barkley. Who wouldn't? What he's saying, he's speaking from what we've all known. And look, Charles Barkley, people forget, at the end of his career, they tried to get together and win a championship in Houston, and it was a disaster. It was. I mean, part of it was they were just old, and Charles Barkley broke down. But it's not for lack of trying. Go back and look at that Houston Rockets roster in 2006, 2007, right? They had Clyde the Glide, they had Akeem Olajuwon, and they had Charles Barkley. The problem was they were all in mostly their mid-30s, right? Mario Elie as well. They had Matt Maloney. Man, he's good. Eddie Johnson was 37. Kevin Willis. They had some great players. They were just all too old. Just all too old. And then later on, I think they had Scottie Pippen. And it still didn't work. So, you know, everybody thinks you had just great players. Now, the difference is these guys are younger. And I would say that while Kyrie Irving doesn't appear to be hungry for a championship, I do think he enjoys proving people wrong. And everybody thinks that he's wrong right now. James Harden hasn't shown the desire to truly buy in and get in shape and play defense, but there are a lot of naysayers right now. And Kevin Durant loves the idea. Maybe he doesn't love it and pushes back and uses burner accounts to tweet against it, but the truth is that what motivates him is the hatred or anger of others. It just simply does. So I look at it and I think, with so many people, because here's what's going to happen. If they win a championship, you're going to hear people, Nick Wright, Don Cowherd, maybe even Barkley and others go, well, of course they won a championship. They got three superstar players. But I want you to take a snapshot of right now and take a little straw poll and try and figure out exactly why we would have that commentary when right now we're so many people are saying it has no chance of working. They're not saying it might work, it might not work, or even what I'm saying, which is there's a lot of things going against it. It's more likely not to get a lot. Because I look and I'm like, so who do you like, Boston? I don't love them. Who do you like, the Sixers? I don't love them. Who do you like, the Heat? They don't have the dudes. Not going to happen. I know they won on defense last year in fortitude and toughness or whatever. Don't see it happening. Like, I kind of think it probably works. I think there's a likelihood of it not working because of chemistry issues, and no one knows about Kyrie Irving. Plus, Kyrie's always hurt. Kevin Durant's been hurt a good amount. These guys are, you know, getting a little bit, they're not long in the tooth, but they're not spring chickens anymore. But if they all get there healthy and they can get Kyrie in the fold, I kind of think this could be Kevin Durant's shining moment that he's been looking for. It's like we all expect Kevin Durant to have to take a team, a ragtag team of nobodies, and get to the finals and lose the way that Iverson did and LeBron did, and somehow that's going to be something that will change our mind. It wouldn't be. This will. This will. All right, give me your thoughts, 877-99 on Fox, or go to @GottliebShow. @GottliebShow is the Twitter account. Feel free to tweet me your thoughts on why it will or will not work in Brooklyn. Up next, there's a lot more to being a head coach in the NFL than X's and O's or play calling. There's one former head coach that lost his job because of it, and why one head coaching candidate might not get hired. That's next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Discover matches the cash back you earn at the end of your first year. It's amazing because Discover's accepted 99% of the places in the U.S. that take credit cards. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report. Limitations apply. This was Troy Aikman, the Hall of Famer, NFL on Fox lead analyst, on Mike Irvin's podcast talking about why Doug Peterson lost his job.
I reached out to Doug Peterson yesterday when I heard the news, and what I gathered it came down to was a difference of opinion as to how they were moving forward at the quarterback position is what I sensed. I sensed that, you know, here Jeff Lurie, the owner, has paid a lot of money to Carson Wentz, and they're on the hook with him. They can't get out of that contract, you know, right away. It's my belief that Doug Peterson felt that Jalen Hurts was probably the quarterback going forward. And how does that mesh?
So that's what we told you we had heard he was going to say yesterday. But I think that if Doug Peterson's going to die on that hill, that's an interesting hill to die on, right? The Jalen Hurts hill. Because if Peterson does get another head coaching job, my guess would he'd have the opportunity to acquire Jalen Hurts. I've told you, and people, it's been a social media firestorm that I've said, like, I would cut Jalen Hurts for undermining whoever's authority took him out of the game. They were told Sudfeld would play. He wasn't playing particularly well. I mean, you can sit here and argue like, wow, you know, the energy of the team, like, all right, he was 7-for-20 and he dirted a ball that would have given them the lead on fourth down. I didn't think they should have gone for it. Could have kicked the field goal and tied the game, but they went for it. He rolled out to his left. He had a wide open wide receiver and he dirted the ball. They won one game when he was a starting quarterback. It was his first game. He was productive against the Cardinals and they lost. I didn't know that we gave Horseshoe and Hand Grenade Awards to quarterbacks because they're making less money. I guess that's what we've done. But I had my former agent had a term for it. It was called social jujitsu. Hard to say quickly, right? Social jujitsu, social jujitsu, social jujitsu. There you go. I really got to pronounce the jujitsu. So social jujitsu. You know what that means? Do you know what jujitsu is? Ramos, your impression of what jujitsu is?
I believe it's a form of like martial arts.
Yeah. But what is,
maybe defensive martial arts more than offensive?
Okay. If you look up, and again, this is a Wikipedia definition, there's other definitions. It's a system of close combat that can be used in a defensive or offensive manner to kill or subdue in one or more weaponless or armed or unarmed opponents. Right. A subset of techniques and styles. And the point is, like, you have to learn to move and operate more than just X's and O's. Like, Doug Peterson played quarterback. Do I think that he and Carson Wentz saw eye to eye on play calling? Probably not. But it's more how he handled everything. It's more he could have easily, probably, I might easy, he could have gotten his way and had Jalen Hurts as the quarterback of the future. But he chose to stick his heels in the ground against Howie Roseman, and they just said, like, enough. Right? If you want to keep the Eagles job and he really thought Jalen Hurts is the guy, then go like, hey, you know what? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to spend the entire offseason trying to repair the relationship with Carson Wentz. Meanwhile, we'll keep developing Jalen, and let's have an open competition next year, thinking that because of salary, you know, Carson gets the right of first refusal, the chance to lose the job. Knowing in the back of his mind, if you really think he's better, and granted the offense would have to be slightly different, mostly different. I think he lost his job not because of X's and O's, but because of his inability to handle the social jujitsu of losing seasons. His relationship had frayed with his quarterback, his relationship had frayed with his boss, and his relationship had frayed with his owner. And that's it's about relationships. It's about how do you manage people? How do you manage adversity? And so it's interesting that here Eric Bieniemy is, he's the flavor of the month. Eric Bieniemy was one of my favorite players when he played at the University of Colorado. Colorado used to be an awesome football program. Remember they had Darian Hagan? They had cool teams. And then he had that great nickname, Eric Sleeps with Bieniemy. That was Boomer's nickname. Oh, why is that? What? Eric Sleeps with Bieniemy. But what I had heard, and some of this is confirmation bias, is like, look, he ain't for everybody in terms of how he handles the social jujitsu of the moment. Coaching is about leadership. It's about getting guys to work together, about empowering your assistant coaches, empowering your players, still maintaining a form of discipline and control, but doing so kind of in a way in which no one knows they're being disciplined and doesn't know they're being controlled. And so when you ask yourself, why hasn't Bieniemy gotten a job yet? It's not about football knowledge. The guy clearly knows football. My guess would be it's in whatever his approach is during his time in the NFL and during these meetings, which doesn't always sit perfectly well with people. And you have to find somebody you think you can work with because you're going to work with them every day. Social jujitsu.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Brandon Whedon is our guest. He's played in three different organizations, drafted by the Cleveland Browns. Of course, played for the Dallas Cowboys and the Houston Texans. By your estimation, you played for, I'm trying to think, one, two, three, four, what, four or five head coaches during your time in the NFL. How much of the job is X and O's, and how much of it is leading, managing, motivating people?
I think every situation is a little different, but I mean, I think kind of like I've said on here several times, I think the guys that do it the right way are kind of that CEO type of guy, kind of, you know, calling the shots, keeping guys motivated, you know, managing all the personalities. There's a lot of personalities, and particularly in football locker rooms, obviously. But then, yeah, I mean, on Sunday, you know, it's managing the game, you know, controlling the game throughout the week, preparing a little bit. But I think a lot of the good ones, you know, they tend to, you know, have guys that can kind of delegate some of that stuff, because being a head coach is so obviously time consuming and so strenuous. So, yeah, it's a lot of it is managing people and just trying to get grown men to make a bunch of money all on the same page and play hard every Sunday. And, you know, sometimes it's just not that easy, but that's kind of the nature of the beast.
Do you think Urban Meyer will be a success in Jacksonville?
I mean, that's probably the, what are they going to pay him, $8, $9, $10 million question, right? I mean, they, you know, I think guys respect him. I think they've seen what he's done at the collegiate level. Pretty much everywhere he's ever been, he's won games. So I think immediately guys are going to respect him. I think he needs to go out and put a pretty good staff together. I haven't really seen who he's going to bring in. Yeah, I mean, you know, you're going to get the first pick overall, probably going to be Trevor Lawrence. You got a franchise quarterback there, you hope. You got a ton of money in cap space to go out and do some good things on in free agency. And then you got a pretty good nucleus of young players. You know, Miles Jackson, good backer. They've got some young receivers. They got a couple pretty good offensive line. But I think they've got a chance to be a pretty good football team here pretty quick, just with all the resources they're going to have as far as draft and all that money they got in free agency.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. All right, let's get to this weekend's games. Cleveland is the biggest underdog. Kansas City hasn't been dusting teams off. They did have the week off. And Cleveland comes off an impressive performance against the Pittsburgh Steelers. How competitive do you think Cleveland can be in Kansas City?
I think it's going to be, I mean, if I was a betting man, I'd take that 10 points and buy the half and get it 10 and a half. I'd feel pretty good about it. I think they can keep it relatively close with that running game. Defense is playing pretty good. I mean, you got to remember, you got Patrick Mahomes on the other side, so you know, you can't plan on scoring 21, 24 points and chances of winning are not very good. So I really do. I think they're playing with some momentum. You know, they got some confidence right now. So I think they can keep it close. You know, the trick is you got to play a little bit of ball control. You know, again, with that run game, that'll help and keep Patrick Mahomes and that offense off the field. But I'm still not 100% sold on this Kansas City defense. I think they're pretty good. I just think they've got some deficiencies that, you know, in my opinion, once they start facing, you know, offenses down the stretch, if they were to move on, I think they might get exposed a little bit on the defensive side of the ball. But it doesn't matter when you get 15 over there on the other side. He usually makes it right and kind of takes care of that defense. But I think this is going to be a really good football game. I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be one of the better games of the weekend.
I do as well. All right, let's go to Baltimore and Buffalo. You know, it's interesting, and I'm sure you probably feel this way. I don't know if you said it, but like here, Josh Allen is a first-round pick. He was much younger than you were when you were drafted, but it doesn't matter. Like, you're still playing in the NFL. He really struggled his first two years with accuracy. By his third year, he kind of figured it out. They figured out. They got him pieces. As much as it's a testament to his improvement, isn't it also a testament to a franchise really buying in and trying to help a guy because you can't? It's hard to do it right away.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I played against him his rookie year, and I mean, I was one of those guys. I was like, you know, every ball he threw was 100 miles an hour, and I was like, you know, he's a big guy, big arm. I just didn't quite see it, but I mean, that guy's evolved. He's really taken his game to the next level, and you got to credit Sean McDermott and Brian Daboll and those guys, you know, on the offensive side of the ball in particular. You know, they got a lot of really good pieces around them. You know, they went out and got the trade with Minnesota and got Diggs, and you know, he's one of the better receivers in the league. And then, you know, Cole Beasley's doing his thing. So they got a lot of weapons, and he's gotten better. He's throwing the ball more accurately. He's throwing the ball down the field pretty accurately with some touch, and runs around. He's mobile. He's a big guy. I mean, you know, that's a good football team. And I've kind of seen it. I saw it coming probably in 2015. We played them, and I was like, man, this team's tough. You know, they're just a couple pieces away. And, you know, here they are, you know, in my opinion, probably if I'm in the NFL, that's probably the last team I want to play right now. I just think they're playing as good, if not better, than anybody in the league, in large part because Josh Allen's he's sitting back there kind of carving them up. He's playing good. And, you know, he's about to get paid here in a couple of years, and he deserves it.
Doug Gottlieb show here on Fox Sports Radio. Did Lamar do anything different? You know, they're down 10-0. A lot of us thought, hey, he doesn't come from behind well, and can they win on the road? Can they beat the Titans? I felt like the one difference was when they got behind, they didn't change. They stuck to the script, whereas in the past, they would tear it up and try and throw the football, and that would even backfire. But what are your thoughts on Baltimore and Lamar's first playoff win?
I thought he played well. Like you said, they started slow, but you know he's so dangerous. I mean, you give him a crease. I mean, would he have that 48-yard touchdown run, and he rushed for close to 100, maybe not more than 100. I mean, he's just so dynamic with his feet. And you know, as a defensive player, you got to be scared to death. I mean, you got to rush him correctly. You can't let him get outside the pocket because he's just faster than everybody on the field. I'm a big Lamar Jackson fan. I still think he needs to get a little bit better throwing the football, but. You know, with his ability to scare teams with his feet and get out of the pocket, and he's dynamic, man. He's dynamic. I was happy to see him get his first win. It was a good win for him. That's going to be another really good football game this weekend. But yeah, you know, to get the monkey off the back, I'm sure he had to answer that question a million times. You know, about the playoff losses and the whole deal, and you know, to go on the road and play a really good Tennessee Titans team that was playing pretty good ball, especially on offense. That's a good win. That's a good win for that team, and. You know, hopefully gives Lamar a little bit of confidence going forward.
Doug Gottlieb show here on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, let's get to the NFC. The Rams, Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey on the road against the Packers. I mean, like, look, Aaron Donald is so good and so dynamic that he can destroy your entire offensive line. Of course, David Bakhtiari's out for the season, so they're patching a hole. May not be a hole that truly affects Donald, but still, it all kind of is related. How likely are the Rams to go into Green Bay and get an upset?
Yeah, with that defense, I mean, anything's possible. I know it's tough. You know, if there were fans there and you had the whole true home field advantage, obviously it's going to be colder than what they've played in a while. But with that defense, with Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, in my opinion, two of the best at their position, I mean, anything's possible. They're going to have to rely on that defense. I don't know. I know Jared, I mean, he played fairly well for coming 12 days off of a surgery, and I'm assuming he's going to start, and it looks like Blake Bortles will back him up. But, you know, they're going to have to try to keep it low scoring, and that's their only chance. And with Aaron Rodgers on the other side, you know, as good as the Rams' defense is, I'm just not real sure you can slow that guy down for four quarters. I just don't think – I don't think they got enough firepower on offense to keep up. I really don't. I think Green Bay wins that game. But I think it's a close one, and I think it's a relatively low-scoring game just because of how stout and how good that Rams and Rams defense is. So, I just, 12 in Lambeau, in Green Bay, in the playoffs, man, you'd be crazy to bet against him. He's just he's playing on a different level than pretty much everybody else in the league.
All right, let me get to two Hall of Fame quarterbacks. And Brady's played against them twice and lost and hasn't looked good either time against them. But again, this is the playoffs and he's looked better. He was probably the best part of Tampa. As a team, they weren't great, but he was really good this past week. What's the likelihood of Tampa? I mean, being a team is hard three times when you're just better than them or it's a bad matchup. What do you think about Tampa and New Orleans?
I think this is not, I'm having a hard time getting a beat on this one. I mean, you know, we all know what they did the first two times they played. But the reason they won those games is they got pressure on Brady and hit him often. You know, and he just never got comfortable, and I don't know what his numbers were, but they just, you know, they really weren't close games. So they're going to do the same thing. That D-line for the Saints is pretty solid. They can get pressure. The big thing with Brady, and every team knows this, is you got to pressure him, you know, up the middle. You can't. The edge pressure is good, but he's just going to step up and just kind of yawn at you. So you got to get pressure, whether it be games. You got to push the center of the pocket, because if you don't, he's just going to sit back there and get the ball out quick and carve you up. But yeah, this is going to be a tough game. This to me is, you know, can Drew play a little bit better maybe than he has his last few times out? And if so, I think New Orleans is tough to beat. But you know, Brady's got those guys playing pretty good. Looks like. You know, Tony Brown's got his legs underneath him. You know, Mike Evans had a scary injury. He played pretty well. So, you know, Godwin had a couple drops. I'm sure he's going to be hungry to get out there and play. So, I don't know. This game's going to be close. I'm anxious to watch it, not just because of the quarterbacks, but I think they're two of the better teams. Obviously, teams left in the playoffs. So, I don't know. This one, if you had held a gun to my head, I'd probably take the home team. But I'm kind of pulling for Brady to kind of prove everybody wrong and see if he can get down there and get it done.
You're the best, man. I hope you enjoy the football this week. We'll talk to you next week. Championship weekend coming up next weekend. And thanks so much for joining us.
All right, buddy. See you.
All right, that's the one and only Brandon Whedon joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year. It's amazing because Discover is accepted at 99% of the places where credit cards are accepted. That's discover.com. Biggest trade in sports history? Is it the James Harden deal? We'll discuss next.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Let's get to a game.
Game time!
This is game time.
It's game time.
On the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Dan, Beyer, what do you got?
Beyer. Doug, just some clarification. The reason why the whole jiu-jitsu thing was a bit confusing is because we all practice Miyagi-Do here at Fox Sports Radio.
Son. Yes. Wax on, wax off.
Man, I just wrapped up season 3 of Cobra Kai. Can't wait till season 4. All right. The game today is...
I feel a draft.
All right, everybody's going to be putting their draft caps on, so we're going to need John Ramos and Ryan Music available for this segment. Doug, today we are drafting the most memorable trades in sports history. So trades that stand out in your mind, or maybe you remember where you were when it happened. This is the draft order today. Ryan Music has the first overall pick, then Doug, then Ramos, and then myself, and then we'll snake back. Just a two-round draft allows us to maybe even talk about some of these deals when they went down. But most memorable trades in sports history, Ryan Music, you are on the clock.
Oh, boy. A lot to choose from. I am open for business, by the way. So I'm listening to any and all offers, but...
Crickets.
Yeah, crickets. Okay, okay. I don't offer up deals along the lines of John Ramos, so I'm not surprised that there are no takers here. But I'm going to go with one that was near and dear to me. The Shaq trade was probably the most memorable, being a Lakers fan, watching them win championships, and the day that I found out that he was being traded, I was stunned, to say the least.
Wait, what? That's the one you led with?
Well, I mean,
that's probably why it was up for bidding, you know?
Well, for me personally,
the email, so we knew what was... Okay, who's second?
You're picking... You're on the clock, Doug.
Right.
Yep.
The number one, the worst trade of all time is the Babe Ruth trade.
Okay, but when we talk about memorable trades, you weren't alive for it. So I went with
everybody,
one that was more important to me.
Okay. I'm going to take Babe Ruth trade, and everything else pales in comparison, right? I mean, he hit 48 home runs for the Red Sox. He was traded to the Yankees because they needed money for No-No Nanette, right? I mean, it's the Babe Ruth trade, and there's a couple of the trades which we'll talk about, but that's the big.
Here's the crazy thing about that trade. He found it on social media. They didn't even tell him the Red Sox.
He found it on Speakeasy Media. He was going to Speakeasy. He woke up the next day from his drunken slumber and said, "What? New York? Okay." He had more home runs than the entire league. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, Babe Ruth to the Yankees, number two. John Ramos, you are on the clock. Well, most memorable trades.
Yeah, I was thinking about the trade from Jordan to the Wizards, but I'm going to put that to the side and not choose that one. I'm going to take Wayne Gretzky to the LA Kings.
Oh, there you go. That's a good one.
Yep. Yep.
By the way, Jordan
that happened also before you remember Ryan Music. Wayne Gretzky had won, I think they won five straight. They won five straight Stanley Cups, right, in Edmonton, but they came upon hard financial times. And then he got traded to the Kings, where wasn't the owner of the Kings, didn't he eventually get caught running like a Ponzi
Bruce
scheme?
Bruce McNall.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Bad guy.
Yeah, the Argonauts too, right? And he got Rocket Ismail to go there. Yep. All right, so I've got back-to-back picks, and they're both kind of in the same neighborhood. but I'll go with the first one, and that's the Herschel Walker
trade. Okay, that's the synonymous with football.
Yes, trade, yeah. Yes. So Herschel Walker to the Vikings.
And the second one.
Yeah, I'm going with the second one as well. Ricky Williams, the draft day trade from the with the Saints and the then Washington Redskins, where Mike Ditka traded his entire draft and then a first round pick and third round pick the next year for the fifth overall pick, and then took Ricky Williams with that selection. So the two big NFLers. I was going to go Richie Sexson to the Diamondbacks and then the Brewers package they got back, but I passed. So Herschel Walker and Ricky Williams, those two back to back. All right, John Ramos, you are back on the clock.
Yeah, I don't know about if this was a – well, for me it was a big trade, and because as a Rams fan, Eric Dickerson, a lot of to the Colts in 87. He was like the Rams' main person, and all of a sudden he was gone, and we got back like 80 players for that. So I would say Eric Dickerson to the Colts, 1987.
Okay. I mean, again, I'm going to have to go kind of historic here. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was traded to the L.A. Lakers.
Yep.
For Junior Bridgman, who, by the way, is richer than all the rest of them combined now, Dave Myers, Elmore Smith, and Brian Winters became an NBA head coach. That's for the six-time NBA MVP, leading scorer in MVP history in NBA history.
That's a good one.
Rhyme music.
Brought Kareem to L.A. That was big.
Yeah, so my last pick that I'm sure Doug will just love and take no issue with, considering that the title of this game is Your Most Memorable Trades.
Okay.
Your Most Memorable Trades.
Okay.
I'm going to go with A-Rod to the Yankees. Yeah, right. A-Rod to the Yankees was quite shocking at the time.
Okay. Yeah. That's not bad. I mean, that was during your lifetime. It did happen. He did end up winning a tainted World Series, but we'll give it to you.
Any honorable mentions? I don't want to go another round with this, but
I mean, the James Harden trade was big. I think trades that didn't happen. There's Randy Johnson was sent to the Yankees, right, for like Mark Langston and somebody else. Like, Randy Johnson was the best pitcher in baseball. There's a lot of baseball ones. Pedro Martinez was traded. CeCe Sabathia was traded. There's some great pitchers that have been traded.
I remember the Manny Ramirez to the Dodgers trade because the 1 o'clock deadline here on the West Coast had passed. And so it wasn't until, I don't know, maybe 30 minutes after that you actually found out that a trade was done. You're like, all right, this, you know, trade deadline, this. And then all of a sudden you found out that they got the deal done before the deadline. So I remember when it was a big deal out here when Manny got dealt by Boston to the Dodgers. Not the biggest by any means, but just how it went down was memorable.
And you had Manny World for a while, and people were super psyched. And then turned out that, another owner that was a phony and a player that was a phony jacked up on steroids.
And the other one I was going to point out, because one of your buddies was involved in it, was the Gary Payton-Ray Allen trade. This was when I was working back in Wisconsin, and Ray Allen dealt to Seattle, and Gary Payton and Desmond Mason came to Milwaukee.
And Desmond Mason, I'll tell the story, that he was at dinner the night before, and owner of the Bucks stopped by, Herb Cole, and he says, don't worry about anything you hear, I'm not trading you tomorrow. The next day he was traded.
That's game, huh?
Game time.
This is Game Time on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Ryan getting a little defensive today. I mean, in terms of most memorable trade, like that's one that I wasn't alive. None of us were alive. But Babe Ruth being traded for money, and he's the greatest baseball player of most any era. That's a big one. Well, what was Barry Bonds traded for? I forget. How did he get from Pittsburgh, where he was skinny, to San Francisco, where he was jacked? Forgot how that took place. Probably had to look that one up. But those are fun. Trades are fun. I'm interested in what happens. I mean, for a league that is not interesting right now, the NBA is not interesting. This is something that's interesting. And not just because of how guys play, but the social aspect to it, how they handle themselves. James Harden's, do you still keep his jersey up in that Houston strip club where he spent $1 million in a night? It's a good question. These are questions that America wants to know answers to. It looks like Urban Meyer is going to be head coach of the Jaguars. The number one reason I believe he'll succeed in the NFL actually has nothing to do with Urban. I'll explain next in the Doug Gottlieb Show.